E1. Number 5B.
So that we can really find in this fact that structure creates structures, the answer to creativity, the answer to be not only creative, but really ingenious in science. It isn't then to see that we as people should be very clever, and we as people should really have a high intellectual platform, but that we see that the more we touch the spirit of the simple fundamentals of being, that that has within itself the seed to bring forth higher structures. For instance, we read in Kepes' book, each part with its own structure merges into a structure on a larger scale. I think, in a way, this week, and perhaps especially if we would meet again next year and the year after, where I could show you how the idea of matrix and matrices have been born to consciousness, there we find a wonderful explication and example of how really one structure was the basis for the emergence of new and higher and larger structure or structures on a larger scale. He says, structure on one level by its imperfection or variations, and this is what implies to us, by its variations, always give rise to a new kind of structure on a larger scale. You know, once we have touched, for instance, the structure of a matrix, or say, the structure of the textbook in a matrix form, that has at once, well, not quite at once, but after a few years, given rise to see new kind of structures. For instance, the structure of the prophets, the structure of the epistles, the structure later on of the synonymous terms in a matrix form. This is all still something that you can't see yet. I just give you the promise of what can happen when we use the method of structural thinking. White in that book says, but we do not yet know what structure means where there is complex transformation. There, the structure of change is still obscure. Can you see, they still have that great question open, how it is possible that when there are lot of complex structures implied, how the transformation takes place. And Mrs. Eddy really gives an answer. She speaks about the signs which govern these changes. She has a signs of changes in her textbook, meaning that if we understand the chart, then we understand the chart not only in a static way, but in an infinitely changing way. It's constantly cybernetic within itself, self-organizing within itself. And this is one of the greatest wonders that exists, that being, though it never repeats itself and therefore is not static, though being is constantly in the state of change, that the stability of being, the harmony of being is never touched. So that if we understand how structure changes, therefore if we understand those laws of transformations, then we understand the signs that govern these changes, and naturally this is terrific. Because then we can see that we can go forward and forward and forward and forward, meet new situation, meet absolutely new situation which we have never challenged, which we have never met, which are a complete new challenge to us, and yet see that these new challenges are not anything that can bring in a crisis or inharmony or or an instability or an insecurity, but that the signs which shows that laws of transformation will be to us something that is leading us in a harmonious way from one change to the other. In order to see that, structure demands structural laws. We will be discussing structural laws one after the other this week. I just want to indicate that Professor Amar says structural laws coordinate all events into one system and bestow to that system the character of wholeness. Now, can you see, if you have in mind our chart, which is really the whole model of being, that within that chart must be structural laws, and we'll touch on them, structural laws which coordinate all events. Therefore, all our problems, all our experience into one system and bestow to that system the character of wholeness, so that we can really see that whatever problem we meet, that we meet it within the framework of the whole and not just within a small framework that is limited, that is human, that is personal, that is just applying to ourselves. And therefore, there we will touch a great new problem, the problem of wholeness in every part. Let me perhaps point out one or the others. Yeah. So, let's go to the next definition you have on your paper. That's the definition of structuralism. Structuralism, therefore, would be that theory which has to do with structures per se. And so, let's read what structuralism is. Here we have, structuralism is that method of procedure. It's a method. You see, it's a method. It's not just a system, it's a method, and you know a method is something very practical, because method is that scientific aspect which shows us how to apply a system in a scientific way. So structuralism is a method of procedure which transforms every problem into a structural problem. Well, this is terrific. You see, it is that, therefore, which takes every problem which before, in the old paradigm, we were dealing with in an isolated way, in an atomistic way, as a single happening, as a single truth or counterfeit, whatever the situation was, and we are dealing with it metaphysically, dealing with a single situation. Structuralism takes the same problem, but not in an atomistic way, but transforms first that problem really into a structural problem. And what does he mean by transforming it into a structural problem? He says, in structuralism, the object itself and its various constituents are seen as point of intersections of multitudinous systems of reference. You see, we remember last year when we were considering the chart, and also in some way in my book on the four levels of spiritual consciousness, we are always considering every position within that chart not as something per se, therefore not as an atomistic truth, but always as a point of intersection of a vertical category with a horizontal category. So what we were doing for the last 2 years was to introduce really the meaning of structuralism, namely to think instead of in terms of single truth, to think in terms of categories. See, that's the great difference. To begin to think in terms of categories and classifications and not in terms of facts, of truth. We could see that really a truth is nothing per se, but only that point of intersection where two or more categories were meeting. So we had in that chart, say, in the vertical, say, the Christ meeting, for instance, on the horizontal, absolute Christian Science, and we could define, therefore, there the Christ as truth, life, and love, as you remember, and bringing, therefore, out that here the Christ means that which can take the whole truth and bring out its specific individual idea of truth. Just to bring out one point of intersection. So, in the future, we are no more so much interested in these individual truths, in these individual situations, but we put that individual truth into a bigger framework of categories, and therefore give to that problem its proper place, so that it is not out of focus. And that naturally means a lot in Christian Science practice, in the healing practice, in life practice, that we really have for solving our problems a big enough system of reference, and not a small system of reference. The bigger the system of reference is, the more we solve that problem in a big way, or let's say in a way that it has a lasting and or eternal value in our life, and not just a temporal value in our life. So we see here that structuralism is really quite a different approach. Now let's read the next one from an American writer. Structuralism is a mode of thought. You see, he too considers it as a method. So let's be sure, you see, that it is a method and not just a system, because it means you can apply it. It's a mode of application. It's a mode to think. It's a mode how to think. Structuralism constitutes essentially a method. By method is meant any set of rules or regulations which describes and prescribes the operations to be performed upon any matter with the purpose of ordering it and understanding its workings. So again, instead of having just a bang-on truth, so to say, a bang-on fact, and that's that, we enlarge our system of reference and begin to see how it is working within a bigger frame of reference, and therefore we can understand it better. Just think of that secretary, of what she was talking about, when she was talking and telling the whole story, it didn't yield any understanding. But the moment we put it into a frame of reference, it yielded understanding, insight, comprehension, and we just could understand what is happening. Then the next one is the most important one from Jean Piaget. Is one of the foremost and most accepted thinker in structuralism. And in his little book, he writes this. A structure is a system of transformations. You see how transformation plays a great part. It's a system of transformation. Namely, to transform any problem first into a structural problem. That's the great point. Inasmuch as it is a system and not a mere collection of elements and their properties, so it's not a mere collection of elements and their properties. It's not just a collection of ideas of mind in order to build up a tone of mind. These transformation involve laws. And that's why we will be interested in seeing the laws. The structure is preserved or enriched by the interplay of its transformation laws. So we can have a great enrichment of a law through transformation. We will see, for instance, if we are thinking on the level of science itself, and therefore just see the system of science itself as the law of science itself, that we can enrich that law by transforming it into the laws of divine science, for instance, and therefore have the laws of transformation which transforms the law of science itself, we'll do that today or tomorrow, into the laws of divine science, and therefore enriching it. And later on we can transform them into the laws of absolute Christian science, and enrich them even more. And later on transform the very same laws into the laws of Christian science, and enrich it even more. So really, we have this, that the structure is preserved. It's still the same structure, namely the structure of the one infinite being, or enriched by the interplay of its transformation laws, which never yield results external to the system. There is nothing external to the system. Therefore, no external addition is necessary. Once we have the chart, everything is happening within the chart. We only have to understand the laws of the chart and the transformation laws of the chart, then everything happens within the realm of the one being. And so we don't need to employ, as it goes on, nor employ elements that are external to it. We do not need anything more. Once we see that chart as what it means, we don't need anything else anymore. What we have to demonstrate in life, for all the problems which we have to handle in our experience. And then he sums up the whole book in one sentence. And I guess if we can keep this one sentence in our mind for the whole week, because we'll go back and back and back and back to it, because from now on we will just see how our consciousness is steadily geared into structural consciousness. He says, in short, the notion of structure is comprised of three key ideas. What are they? First, it's the idea of wholeness. See, structuralism always goes out from the wholeness, never from the pieces and parts. Never goes out from a single problem, from a single statement, from a single fact, from a single idea. It always goes out from the idea of wholeness, so that it never loses anything of the wholeness. Then second, the idea of transformation. The terrific big question, which for the last 60 or 70 years has captured the attention of the great thinkers in the field of physics, for instance. Even Heisenberg has written lately a book just with that title, The Whole and the Parts, because that was, since the Greeks, the great, great question, namely that the whole is a whole. You can't split the whole into parts because the whole remains the whole, and yet we want to know the parts. And therefore there was always that great challenge. Shall we sacrifice the idea of the whole for the idea of investigating the parts, analyzing the whole into parts? And that's the way science has gone for the last 2,000 years or 2,500 years. And now in this century, slowly, the idea has come back and has turned around and said, no, 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 we can't go on that way, splitting up, splitting up, splitting up, or else we really destroy our whole world. We have to see that the whole is kept intact. That's why in the recent year the whole question of ecology has suddenly sprung up. 5 years ago nobody knew what ecology is. Today everybody talks about ecology. What is ecology? Seeing that we can't go on any longer in the old way of rational science, analyzing and analyzing, and just viewing the parts per se as a whole that is complete within itself, but that each part is a part of the big whole and only is then right when it is right within the whole. That today we are suffering really under that point, that say a chemical factory just has found a new invention and produces now a new product, and the things that they don't need go out with into the water. What you call it? The pollution then of the water. Perhaps it's very poisonous. Well, they don't care. They have never cared. It goes out into infinite ocean, and there is plenty of water there, and so it doesn't matter. Huh? So they produce something by just limiting their view on that product, and that product was good, and they made a lot of money, and people liked it and bought it and felt it is good and good and good and good. And suddenly we find out it's not good and good and good, it's bad, bad, bad. Because suddenly we begin to see that within a bigger frame of reference, what seemed to be good is now bad. A complete turn. And this is true in every branch of science, not only in this practical example which I have just given, but in everything, that now we begin to see that we have to turn the tide and see that the part is only right if it is right within the whole. So, why did I get to that one? Oh yes, I got to that one because of that second idea of the idea of transformation. You see, the big problem which we have in the science of being is that we have the infinite one, but that the infinite one, from the one in Christian science, comes one infinite principle, that's the whole, and its infinite idea. Well, there must be a law of transformation that is able to bring the one infinite principle right down to an individual specific idea without losing its nature of being, the idea of principle. Without losing the nature of the infinite. So that we must get rid of that ancient Greek philosophy and concept which has been impregnated, so to say, in our consciousness, that the part is only a part, a little bit of the whole. A part should be always an aspect of the whole. Not just a tiny piece of dust within infinity. And this is something that we can hardly think of, because for 2,500 years we have been trained that you can take a big piece and cut it into parts, and then you have two pieces, and then take the half and cut it again, and then you have a fourth, and then an eighth, and then a sixteenth, and so go on until you had a tiny little part. That's how our human thinking has been trained. That was not so before the Greek period. Before the Greek period, in the mystical period, even in the magic period, everyone felt to be part of a whole, and never apart from the whole, but always part of the whole, never apart from the whole. Now, those 2,000 years may have been necessary in order to sharpen our logic and to sharpen our understanding and see the great profits that we get from analysis, but we have lost sight of the main thing, that the whole still remains the whole. So the laws of transformation really should show that the whole, by being translated, does never become a part, but that the whole remains the whole, and that what seems to be a part or piece is actually only an aspect of the whole. Then we get it. And that's what we would like to see this week, when we have a synonymous term like mind, that we can see that that mind can translate itself into all sorts of outward phenomena, all sorts of characteristics of mind, without losing the sense of mind, without being then restricted or limited to something very small.